Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach David Bartke here. Today is Sunday, May the 6th, 2018, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. This is your weekend dose of happy. And David, I hope you've had a great weekend. I know I have. So if you've had one too, then we've both had a good one.
We both did.
Hooray!
Weekend.
Absolutely. It's been wonderful. Yeah, we Louise and I went down to the shoreline to Stonington, Connecticut, which is right near the Rhode Island border, and a little old town section right down on the shore. And she explored the shops, which, of course, she loves to do. And we went over to Mystic, to one of our favorite restaurants, the S&P Oyster House, and had a really, really nice lunch. And just kind of hung out by the water. It was a beautiful day. I mean, it wasn't like a sunny day, but the rain had disappeared. That was half the battle right there. It was, you know, pleasant weather out, and we had a good time. So, yeah, it's a good day, a very good day. How about you?
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, today a friend came over whose birthday it was.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we had a nice day, and she's actually very into the law of attraction, and I was reading her. Remember we had read that chapter about weight loss?
Yes.
Because she's on a diet, so I said, sit down a minute.
Okay.
I have something to read to you. So we went through the chapter, and it was great. And she, because she's already into the law of attraction, she understood it in a way that, you know, some other people wouldn't understand.
Right, sure.
So it was just great, and she really got how, you know, her vibration played a part in her success as reaching her goal weight, and, you know, everything that chapter says. It was such good information.
I'm curious, did she react to the one part of it that Wendy and I talked about and that I reacted to so strongly, the idea about the metaphor about going into the ice cream shop and you can go in 1,000 times and all that?
She did. I mean, she kind of saw that more as a metaphor than more as a, you know, somebody really doing that.
Okay.
yeah. But she got it, and she was like, well, yes, that's it. You know, this person with the high vibration eating all that ice cream is going to just be a person eating ice cream, and someone who eats that ice cream and they're at a low vibration is going to be the person that gains weight from that ice cream. And, you know, she had an interesting point. She was saying her husband's thin, and she said that even with all whatever issues he has in general, he has no resistance about food. And he eats whatever he wants and doesn't gain any weight because he just doesn't have any...
There's no issue there.
There's no issue there. So that's kind of interesting. Like, you know, compared to those of us, and I'm one of them, who, like, oh, God, I can't eat that brownie because it's got 600 calories.
It's funny because I never really had much of an issue. In the last couple of years, I put on a few pounds, but that's like really new for me. Most of my life, I never had any kind of problem. And the last few years was when all of a sudden I was paying attention to food as if it were an issue. And so sure enough, to some small extent, it became an issue. But the thing that really strikes me about it is you have people who, like you say, and I was one of them for many, many years, people who just don't pay any attention. They're just, you know, it's not an issue. It's not a big deal. So as a result, they don't end up putting on the weight. And the people who do put on the weight are the ones who make it an issue. And why are they making it an issue? Well, lots of reasons. You know, there's lots of societal influences. There's all kinds of stuff going on. But bottom line is, what way are you going to look at it?
That's right.
That's really it.
I thought that was interesting that she realized that wow, my husband doesn't give one thought to his food.
Oh, yeah.
And he just eats whatever he wants, and he's thin.
I've been also following Wendy's approach, because we talked about that a bit. Wendy's approach now is she is changing her mindset about food and basically just allowing herself to enjoy it and checking.
Yes.
She checks internally before she has anything. So she basically asks her inner being for permission to eat.
Yes, which is kind of funny. My friend was talking about that even before reading this chapter. She kind of does something similar. So I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been kind of emulating that, and I found I found myself turning down sweets and all kinds of stuff because when I asked inside, what I really got back was, I really don't want that, which is really weird.
And she really liked how in the book it says, they give an example of someone having a cookie, and the high vibration way to be would be like, oh, cookie, it's funny to say it, you look so good.
Yes, right.
Thank you for tasting so good. I'm really going to enjoy you.
Well, we were enjoying our lunch today for sure, because we were at we're on the shoreline, so we were having seafood. And you know what the rule is with seafood. You see food, you eat food. So we were eating it. It was delicious. I had a really wonderful bowl of clam chowder and a shrimp cocktail. And, I mean, those shrimp were just absolutely tasty with a really good cocktail sauce. And it was just, ugh. You know, every single bite, you just kind of just let it drip down the back of your throat and onto your taste buds and kind of flow all over the place.
Well, I had an interesting experience during lunch today, and it's all because of the book we're reading in that chapter I was just talking about. A bunch of us went to the Cheesecake Factory.
Oh.
And they have this burrito. I think it's called like the Factory Burrito.
Mm.
And it sounded really good, so I ordered that. And it came to the table, and it was quite large.
Yeah, their servings are a little bit on the large side, yes.
Yeah, so the old me thought, ooh, I better cut this in half and just eat half now, and I'll bring the rest home and have it later because, wow, I was just going into very resistant thoughts and more low vibration thoughts, and I realized I was doing that. I thought, oh, my God, what am I doing? I'm setting myself up for this burrito to be really fattening.
Isn't it amazing how easily we fall into that?
So easily. So easily. So I ate and fully enjoyed the first half. And I followed the advice in the book we're reading, and I was just to myself thinking, oh, thank you, burrito. You taste really good. Thank you for nourishing my body, and I just know you're aiding me in my goal to lose a few pounds. And then when I finished the first half, I thought, that second half looks really good. So needless to say, the second half never made it home.
No doggy bag today. Yeah, I get it.
Right. And I'm glad that I did that because I did it from the high vibration place that the book suggests.
Yeah, that's a much better place to do it.
And it was interesting because afterwards, I felt full, but I didn't feel, you know, sometimes you eat a lot and you can just kind of talk yourself into feeling like really full, like, ugh, I ate that whole thing, and I didn't go into any of that low vibration thinking.
Well,
many
years ago, they made a commercial about that, you know.
What was that one?
I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
That's funny. I think I kind of remember that.
It was an Alka-Seltzer commercial from way, way back.
But I thought it was really interesting that I ate that burrito from a high vibration place, and when I was done, I was full, but not that like kind of full where you're like, oh. And I thought that's really interesting because it looked like it would be that if you ate that whole thing, that it would be that kind of thing where you would feel that way. But I think because of how I was thinking about it, I didn't feel that way. So that's kind of interesting.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure. In fact, I've been noticing the opposite side of the fence for the last couple of weeks. There have been times where, I mean, most of my days I'm doing pretty good at keeping myself in a higher vibrational level. But there have been times where I slip down. And almost inevitably, whenever I slip down, I found myself wanting to get something to eat. And I thought to myself, whoa, that's really a bad combination. And I actually gave into it a couple times. But I did get to the point where I stopped doing that. And the experience of not doing it when I had the urge to do it, you know, the urge to eat because I was feeling down, when I stopped myself and succeeded in stopping myself, I didn't have the reaction I thought I would have. I thought I would have the reaction of, oh, geez, I just really want to have that. I can just taste it in my mouth. And that wasn't it. My reaction was one of relief.
Wow. Which
I did not expect that. And it was good. Yeah, I agree. It was a very good reaction. But it was like, oh, good. I didn't give in to that. And it felt good not to give in to that.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, I'm trying to practice that more now.
That chapter was pretty powerful. I mean, I've, of course, have been sharing some of it with my clients as well that need that kind of help, and it's been very eye-opening for them as well, because mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times when we think about vibration and law of attraction, we don't really bring it into, like, you know, how we're eating and how we're thinking about the food and
no, not really.
how we're thinking about other people. Because what, like, another thing that a lot of people resonate with is, like, if you're overweight, when you see someone who's thin or someone that you look at them like, oh, I wish I could be that thin, or I wish I could have that body. A lot of times it's coming from, like, you know, a more low vibration place. So now that we've read that chapter, it's so much better to think, wow, look at that person's body. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy for them mm-hmm. that they're in such great shape. I'm so happy for them that they just had that hot foot Sunday and they're still really thin. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Instead of going the other route with, like, oh, how dare that person be thin and they're eating ice cream sundaes or whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, that's so certainly a market difference.
A real eye-opening chapter in so many ways.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that I think ultimately you want to get to is, yes, it's definitely good to praise the other person in your mind for having eaten whatever it was. That's certainly a superior position. But ultimately, the best position to be in is to be indifferent. It doesn't even come into your mind so that you don't even think about it anymore. Because when you get there, now you're on the verge of a real shift going on.
Like my friend's husband, who eats whatever he wants and never gets sick.
Exactly.
He never thinks about it.
And I totally know it. I understand it because I went through that myself. Most of my life, that's the way I've been. So I understand that mindset. You would think it'd be easy for me to get back. I think it probably is easier than for most people for me to get back. Mm-hmm. And I intend to. I'm almost there, actually.
So you were one of those that people looked at and said,
oh, all the time.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
He can eat whatever he wants and not gain a pound.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was me for the longest time, for, you know, the first 55 years of my life.
Which is wonderful.
It is wonderful. And it's a good mindset. I never really thought of it as a mindset.
Did you even realize it, though?
No.
Because a lot of times when people are in it and it's them, they don't realize.
No, I never gave it a second thought. Not even a first thought.
Yeah.
It never occurred to me to in any way even think about worrying about food. Or to think about getting upset or having to measure. It just never even occurred to me. It was never part of my consciousness at all. And the only reason that I was even aware of the idea of it was because I knew other people who did. But I just never associated it with me, and so I never had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Until I started thinking about it. It wasn't until I started thinking about it that I had the problem. I mean, that I can tell you that for a fact. That is 100%
sure.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I'm 100% sure of that.
Well, that goes along with what the book is saying, because once you started thinking about it, you were kind of kiboshing.
Which we should know. It should be so obvious to us. Those of us who have studied the law of attraction, it should be so obvious. What we think about, we attract more of in our life. You know, we might not be identical to it, but it's going to be the similar vibration. Sure enough, it worked. Just not what I wanted to work.
So what wins? Did you have any wins you could share this past week?
Oh, well, the big win is that the manuscript is done and is now in the hands of all of the contributing authors of the book that we're going to be publishing very soon. And I've got six different variations of covers for them to pick from. And so far, I'm not going to reveal where the vote is going, other than to say there is one cover that is starting to run away with it. So.
And is that the cover you think I will like?
Is it the one that I think you will like? I'm not going to say. I don't want to.
Because remember the wording, I had suggested a particular wording. I'm just wondering if that's the one.
I will not comment on that because about one third of the votes are in, and I don't want to.
Okay.
I don't want to in any way influence the other votes. I mean, I really think people should choose on their own without being influenced by me. So otherwise, why would I put it out there that way, you know? That'd be like, that would be basically like using the law of attraction to work against the very thing I was trying to do.
I know, I have to still send in my vote and I have to read it. And so I'm looking forward to doing that.
Well, we're looking forward to getting your vote as soon as we get it. And hopefully you like
what we did. When do you think the book will be available for people to read it?
Well, once all of the co-authors sign off, and like I said, so far about a third of them have done so, and they've only had the book for 2 days, so that's a pretty good rate right there. Let's say a week from now, they're all done signing off. I don't know if it'll get done in a week, but let's assume that they all sign off by then. Then after that, actually before that, I'll be in touch with all of them because we have to get the social media campaigns wound up, not actually started, but we have to kind of arrange it so that everybody knows what role they're going to play because we're doing this massive blitz all at the same time, right? Once I've got that in place, then the other thing I have to do is go through the Amazon website. We're going to publish this through Amazon, both the Kindle version, and Amazon has their own self-publishing system called createspace.com. We're going to use that. So basically I'll have to go in and make sure everything gets formatted properly for both of those. And then once we have those, we set our date and we do our campaign and boom, we go. So it's going to be this month for sure. Right? That much I know. It's going to be sometime in May.
That's how I went through that Amazon way with my two books about the Law of Attraction. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty easy. Like once you get it formatted the way they want to format it, you just kind of fill it in all the information and before you know what it's up.
Yeah, the formatting is the big thing. I haven't formatted a book since I published my book about 10 years ago. So I imagine it's changed considerably since then. Because at the time, you had to turn everything into HTML code, which I actually knew how to do. So it wasn't difficult for me to do. But I suspect it's a lot easier now than it was then.
Oh, yeah. Much.
So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be good. And we are still going to make it so that our listeners are able to get a free copy of the ebook, the Kindle version.
Excellent.
Yep.
Excellent.
So everyone, no matter what kind of device you have, you'll be able to play it because you can get a Kindle player for any kind of device out there. And so anybody will be able to read the book and get a free copy and share it with friends and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Excellent. What about any wins, like any good parking spots or?
Oh. Yeah, actually, we had a few. Well, the restaurant we went to down the waterfront, we got the best parking spot in the lot. That was good.
And
And Mystic, anybody who knows Mystic, Connecticut knows that parking is always at a premium there. It's very hard usually to get parking because there's just so little of it and so many people around, you know, especially in the harvest season. We just pulled right in. It was right there. Boom, done. Went in for lunch, came out afterward. The parking lot was jam-packed. It's like, whoa, okay.
I love when that happens.
Oh, yeah. That was good. Lots of little things have happened. My baseball team had a big comeback win in the ninth inning today. That was fun. I mean, wins happen all over the place. Wins are happening all over the place. They happen every single day. I was having a conversation with somebody on Facebook who was having a tough time, really, really tough time. She had a big issue she was dealing with. And I was trying to get her to release it, you know, find a way to release it, to forgive, you know, all that kind of thing. And kept emphasizing, you don't forgive in order to forgive for the benefit of the other person. You forgive for yourself so you can let go of it and all that kind of thing. And I think she was starting to get it. But it really, really came home to me just how easily we can fall into the trap of not focusing on the wins. So I'm glad we do the wins. When you're focusing on wins, when you're focusing on good things that happen on a day-to-day basis, that's what a win is anyway, right? When you focus on that stuff, then when you really need a win, when you really need something to focus on, you can find it so much easier. You know what I mean? It's not like you have to stretch for it.
Right, and plus, as we know, what we focus on is what we're going to attract. So,
that's the benefit.
The more you're thinking about what wins you're having, the more wins you're going to attract, which is wonderful.
For me, I'm more interested in what do I have in my arsenal when things don't go right and I'm feeling down. Because
you can use your wins for that too. Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I like to do. I like to take all of my little tools whenever I'm feeling down and say, okay, which one is closest that I can use right now? And so having a list of wins that I've gone through lately, it's a nice reminder. It's a nice, easy way to get into it, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that's great. So you had some nice wins this week.
Yeah, you too, I hope.
Oh, yes. Yep. Wins are always happening, as you said.
They do. Always happen. Continuously. Well, speaking of wins, we are continuing our discussion. David and I have been doing the book, The Astonishing Power of Emotions, Let Your Feelings Be Your Guide by Esther and Jerry Hicks. And we are roughly about a third of the way through the book. We're in part two, and part two is divided up into, I think it's 32, 33 examples of how you apply the basic principles that are laid out in part one. Of course, we've covered part one. And David, you were alluding to the fact that a couple weeks ago we were talking about example number two, which was the one about I can't lose weight. That we actually spent quite a bit of time on that one. And then we very quickly zoomed, I should say, really quickly zoomed through number three, which is my children fight constantly and they're driving me crazy. We're now up to example four. I'm totally disorganized. And I can appreciate this one because for a large portion of my younger life, I was totally disorganized.
Not you.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. Let's just say.
Like in what way? Like you mean in your office, your home, everything? Like what do you mean?
Yes.
All of the above.
Yeah, it was not a happy time. And then after a number of years of kind of trying to find my way and not totally successfully, I was fortunate enough to meet my wife. And let me tell you, she's not perhaps as finicky as some people are, but she is much more organized, and she helped me to be more organized. And so I am now a more organized person, thanks to her.
That's good.
Yeah.
Good. Does it feel better to be organized compared to not organized?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are still things I'm a little bit disorganized about, but I'm much better than I was. And yes, of course it feels better because it takes the stress away. It takes away one more reason to feel down, one more reason to feel bad. You know, once you get yourself a little bit more organized, it's like, oh, I'm on top of things. This is good.
What about like your sock drawer and things like that? Is that really disorganized or is that all perfectly laid
Actually,
out?
Believe it or not, I do not have a sock drawer. What I have is a sock basket.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So all my socks get folded and put into a basket, and then each morning I just reach into the basket and grab a pair, and I'm done.
That sounds pretty organized. So they're all put together in pairs and ready
to
go?
Oh, yeah, I do that, yeah. That's part of the... That's laundry folding night. By the way, I thoroughly recommend to anyone who does not fold laundry with their significant other, their partner or whatever, if you have a significant other or partner or some other person you're close to, you live with, by all means, do your laundry folding together. It makes it so much faster and so much easier. And fun, too.
Yeah, and it's nice to have the help, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we actually do a number of things together. We do the grocery shopping together almost every week.
Yeah.
We do that together, and it just goes faster. It goes easier. It's more fun.
Now, do you like certain things that Louise doesn't like and vice versa? Or are you pretty common in what you like?
I mean, there are differences for sure. We don't tend to buy a whole lot of stuff that only one likes or the other, but we do buy some stuff like that. Most of it is stuff that we both like. I don't know, David. How do I answer that question? I'm not sure what to say to that.
No, because some couples have a similar taste in what they like food-wise, and it makes it very easy. And some people are, someone's into meat, and someone's a vegetarian, and someone's a vegan, and it's like, whoa.
Well, we really don't have that kind of thing, but in our relationship, see, when I grew up, my mom was really not a very good cook at all, and she'd be the first person to admit it, so it's not like I'm telling tales out of school here. She was really not good at all, just not her forte. In fact, the first time that Louise and I went to visit the parents so they can meet her, I warned her in advance how bad of a cook my mom was, and so we decided between the two of us we were going to ask if it would be okay if we could make a meal. And of course, as soon as we suggested that, my mom says, oh, absolutely, the kitchen's yours. Not at so all protective of her territory.
So your mom was good at making reservations.
She wasn't even good at that. It would have been nice, but no. Let's just say that I ate a lot of bland food when I was growing up. So,
I see. So she tried. She tried.
She just really wasn't very good at it, that's all. And
okay.
When I met Louise, Louise is a very good cook, so it was a really nice step up. So for me, almost everything she makes, I can't say everything, but almost everything she makes, I like. So really the hardest part is finding what she likes. Because she's very peculiar, not peculiar, right. Particular about what she likes.
And that was a Freudian slip there.
No, she's not peculiar. She's particular. And,
yeah.
So as a result, most of the time we're trying to figure out what they have that she would like. Now, she's still very conscientious about, well, you know, what about something you would like? You know, what would you like as a treat or something like that? And you know, she'll come up with stuff too. And of course, it's my responsibility actually to say, well, this is what I like, so I do that. But no, most of it is just trying to match up to what her particular tastes are. I mean, because even for making meals, it's always hardest when I'm the one who's coming up with a dinner to make, because it has to match whatever she would like to have. Whereas anything she comes up with, I love. It's not hard. Yeah. I am so easy to please.
If it's on a plate and put down at dinner time, you'll have it.
As long as it's not mooing, that's all I ask. You know?
No, I don't think it should be moving.
No. So no, I was saying mooing, actually, like a cow, but that's all right.
Oh, mooing. I think
mooing.
You said moving.
Like it's still alive, yeah. But mooing is the same. Oh, no. It's basically the same thing. No, it's nothing like that. So anyway, let's get into the chapter here. Who's reading today? Am I reading? Are you reading? How are we doing this?
Well, if you don't mind, I like how you read. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so this example is entitled, I Am Totally Disorganized, and it says, first of all, it's phrased as a question that presumably came from an audience member at one of the workshops, although it doesn't get identified that way. It says, I'd like to be an organized person, but I just can't seem to get it together. I have a variety of interests, and all of them bring a certain amount of stuff with them. So my house is so full of things that are interesting to me, to the point that every place I look, I see clutter. I seem to find the time to think of new projects and gather up more stuff that relates to them, but I don't find the time to put my things in order. I spend a great deal of time just looking for things. Occasionally, I set a day aside with the intention of getting it all cleaned up and organized, but I get bogged down almost as soon as I begin because it just feels so overwhelming to clean it up. I know that I should throw most of it away, but I can't bring myself to do that for fear that as soon as I release it, I'll need it or want it for some reason. So I just keep gathering, and I'm buried in my stuff. I can't delegate these organizational tasks to anyone else because no one else knows what's important to me. And if someone else were to organize it, I still wouldn't know where things are now, where things are. I know that I need to clean this mess up and get myself organized, but I feel paralyzed. Yeah, anyone who's a hoarder knows that one. Now, I can't say I was really a hoarder. Yeah. I was never really a hoarder. I was just messy. And I always knew where everything was. Didn't matter how messy it was. I always knew where it was. As long as nobody else came into the house, I knew where it was. Of course, that means you live alone. It doesn't work very well.
Well, that's that cliche thing where someone goes into someone's office and tidies it all up, but the person comes back and is infuriated because now they don't know where anything is.
Yeah, that's right. One of our favorite British television shows is a program from the 1990s called As Time Goes By, starring Judi Dench. And in that program, one of the side characters who came through for three or four episodes was a woman named Mrs. Flack, which has a really nice name to it, you know. Mrs. Flack, she was the secretary to Judi Dench's husband in the show, played by Jeffrey Palmer, Lionel Hardcastle. And Lionel is an author who's written a very boring biography about his life in Kenya. And Mrs. Flack is there to help him do the editing as his secretary. And unfortunately, Mrs. Flack is not the best secretary in the world. She's actually a very talkative person who annoys the heck out of him. And then she has this other peculiarity that every once in a while, especially if she's asked to leave the room because they have to have a private conversation or whatever, she goes into another room and she tidies it up. But the way she tidies it up is not exactly the way other people would do it. So, for instance, she'll go into the kitchen and she'll put all the crummy things together. Because crummy things should be sorted into the same group. Okay. And then she goes into each of the household is Jean and Lionel Hardcastle, played by Jeffrey and Jeffrey Palmer and Judi Dench, and then Judy's daughter, whose the character's name is Judy, and then her secretary Sandy, who's living with them. So that's the four people in the house. And Mrs. Flack goes into the girls' bedrooms and rearranges everything, including their private drawers. And the girls come home and they say, take a look at your room. Tell me if you notice anything. And then they're trying to figure out, well, who would have done that? And they get together with Judi Dench, and who would have done that with them? Judy says, well, don't look at me. And, no, we don't think you would either. And then they look at Lionel, like, would you have gone into the girls' room? Crazy episodes. I don't even remember why I brought that one up, but I just loved it just because of the fact that, you know, Mrs. Flack liked to organize things by crummy things. So anyway.
We're talking about organizing, yeah.
We are talking about organizing. So anyway, Abraham replies, this is a good opportunity to point out the effect that the law of attraction has upon you in whatever your current situation is. You look around at the clutter, which causes you to feel overwhelmed, and because you feel overwhelmed, you are incapable of doing anything about the clutter. Well, that kind of works that way. So perhaps you can now recognize that your work right now is not to deal with a mess, for you have already acknowledged that you are paralyzed and cannot deal with it. In italics, you have to first find a way of improving your emotional state, and once you are feeling better emotionally, you will find a way of bringing the physical things into organization. In other words, you have to deal with the disorganization in your mind first, and then you can deal with the outward manifestations of it. And then they give us some examples. Example lines to basically be saying to yourself, well, these are not so much good lines. These are like the typical kinds of lines people say. So things like, I should throw this stuff away. I must be crazy to have accumulated so much junk. What was I thinking? But when I do throw things away, before I know it, I realize that I really need them. It gets worse and worse. I've never been organized. Now, these statements are all valid, and they are all upstream statements. And they do represent how you feel. But now, instead of making statements about how things are or about how they have been, try to make statements that cause you to feel better. In other words, your goal here is not to make valid declarations of truth about what is, but instead to make statements that give you a feeling of relief. If you can find some consistent relief about the subject, your energy will shift and the feeling of being paralyzed will be replaced with good feeling action ideas. An improvement in the way you feel means an improvement in the alignment of energies between you and your inner being, resistance or allowing, upstream or downstream. So some examples. I've done nothing wrong by pursuing my interests. It's logical that I would gather materials that support my interests. Many people have interests or hobbies that appeal to them. I can remember my enthusiasm upon finding much of this stuff. I can see how my interest in these subjects caused me to find things to support my interest. That is how the law of attraction is at work. I don't need to throw all of this away. There's nothing wrong with my gathering things that interest me. I'll find a way to store everything and catalog it so that I can find it when I want it. I don't have to do it all at once. I've been living with this for a while, and there's no urgency here. And in time, I'll figure out what to do with it. In the same way I enjoyed finding these things, I will also enjoy organizing them. Now, I have to admit, I never tried that. I never came close to trying that. Any time that I would try to do anything in my pre-Louise days to get myself organized, I never even got to the point of beginning to make statements that had a positive ring to them. It was always the first group. What was I thinking? I was crazy to do this. Why do I still have this? It just gets worse and worse. It just piles up. I never learned how to do that, the second part. Yeah. Just never learned it.
Yeah. Well, until you know, how would you know to even think like that?
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I kind of wonder, if I had known this, would it have worked for me? Because I didn't do it that way. I mean, basically, I burned and ran is what I did. I mean, literally, when I moved out of my condo, I was living in a condo at the time that Louise and I met. And then we moved in together in a new apartment. And then I needed to sell the condo after that, which I did. Most of what I needed out of the condo that I wanted to keep, I was just able to pull out and take to our new apartment. And the rest that was behind was trash. So I basically brought in one of these outfits that was going to do a complete redecorating inside. They did a complete overhaul in the kitchen. They did a whole bunch of stuff so I could sell it. And I said, just throw all the trash out. And they said, okay. So I didn't have to even deal with going through it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That made it easy.
It did make it a lot easier. Because I remember the first time I tried doing it with Louise's help, first of all, just even showing it to her was horrible. It was just a horrible feeling. Yeah. And yeah. then, but she was really good about it. She was really supportive about it. And we did a little bit of it together, which helped, you know, clean it a little bit, but my feeling about it was still terrible. And then once I hired this company to come through and just clean out the lot, throw the whole thing out, that was a relief. That was a better thing.
Yeah.
So I still didn't actually deal with it from an emotional perspective, but the relief that came from letting somebody else take it away was almost as good. And it helped to carry over to, so that, you know, as Louise and I were living together, I wasn't leaving messes all over the place.
So since then, you haven't repeated that?
No, again. I mean, my desk here, as I'm looking around, it's not orderly and tidy. It's a little bit, you know, loosely organized in some ways, but it's not piles and piles of junk like it used to be. It's like, you know, stuff that I use.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Well, when you met Louise, your vibration raised.
Oh, my vibration really raised, yes. Oh,
yeah, so you didn't... I'm not surprised that since then you haven't, you know, kept yourself in that kind of clutter.
Yeah, absolutely. It's true. It's just, I guess what I'm saying is I didn't do it the way Abraham recommends it. Now, this is an interesting point, actually, and it has come up in a number of different contexts. Joel and I actually did a show about this this past Thursday. But the question of getting into alignment before you take an action, that's a big thing from Abraham's perspective.
Yes, very big.
And yet Joel actually makes the argument that very often you have to do it in the opposite order. But there's a caveat there that makes his approach really, really work. And I think it kind of matches up with what I did here. And that is the big problem that Abraham is trying to get people to address or to avoid, in a sense, to avoid falling to the trap of doing, is taking action without ever getting into alignment. Because when you take action without ever getting into alignment, that does almost universally lead to bad results. So if you have a bad habit that goes on a regular basis, and then you take the action to go someplace else, but you don't do anything about the vibration of the bad habit, you continue to perform the bad habit even in the new place. It doesn't change. Whereas what they recommend is get yourself into alignment first before you take any kind of action, and then let the action be inspired out of, you know, getting into a good emotional place. What Joel recommends, and this is for people who are in his practice, because he not only is a law of attraction coach, he's also a psychotherapist. And so he often gets people who are dealing with, you know, severe depression or other psychosomatic illnesses, you know, that kind of thing. So he often has to take more desperate steps than a life coach would have to take. Life coaches don't tend to get quite the same level of people. I mean, not that they never do, but as a rule of thumb, people who go to a life coach more often than not, particularly if it's a law of attraction life coach, they're people who already know the law of attraction to some degree in many cases. And, you know, so there's less educating you guys have to do compared to what a therapist has to do. And you usually don't have to spend a whole lot of time digging into the past to, you know, desensitize some really bad trauma or something like that. Not that you never have to, it's just more of what a therapist has to do.
All right, so what happened?
So anyway, the point is, he's dealing with these people who are, in most cases, dealing with pretty severe traumas. And I won't even try to detail all of them because they usually make me depressed to think about it. But people who've been just really through some bad, 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 bad stuff. And there was one particular kid he was telling me about who, I don't remember what the whole set of circumstances was, but bottom line is that this kid was convinced that he couldn't get himself a job. And he would have panic attacks whenever he tried to go on an interview. And, you know, he was not doing a good job of going out and, you know, pounding the pavement in order to find something. He was basically running away from it because of this traumatized feeling that he had. So Joel, being the very practical guy that he was, instead of continuing to try to talk about it in the office, he set up three interviews for the guy, for the young man, and ferried him off to the three interviews. Got to the first interview, now without getting him into alignment, because this kid was also dealing with depression and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Got him to the first interview, and the kid, before the interview even happened, panicked and ran out of the place. So Joel followed him out and said, okay, now here's what you did. Here's what we want to do differently. Now let's get ourselves psyched up to do this. So he was getting alignment doing. In other words, he took an action first, and then he was getting an alignment. And got him into a better aligned position, took to the second interview. And by the way, Joel planned these out so that the first interview was the one that he thought was actually the least attractive and least worthwhile for the kid, and that the best one was going to be the third one, you know?
Yeah.
So they went to the second one, which was like the one halfway in between, not quite as good as the last one, but, you know, pretty good. And the kid actually got through the interview this time, but he couldn't actually sell himself well, and he didn't smile, and he didn't make the eye contact. He didn't do all the things you're supposed to do in an interview in order to get the job. So, of course, he didn't get an offer. And so he comes out of that, and he's really depressed, and Joel said, no, we got to turn this around. You basically did something that you didn't do with the previous interview. You completed the interview. And you actually said a few things that were right. And, you know, so they rehashed again, and they got him into an even better feeling place and said, okay, so here's what you're going to do with the next one. You're going to make the eye contact. You're going to smile. You're going to do all this kind of stuff. Got him to the interview for the third one, and he passed it with flying colors and got the job.
Excellent. Yay.
So notice the order. Action.
Yeah.
Alignment. Action. Alignment. Action. He did it in reverse order, but he did it so that they were so close to each other that it's as if he had done the alignment first.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's almost like, like with each one, he came into more alignment.
He was kind of building it up, right. He was building the alignment because I mean, when you're in such a depressed state like this kid was in a really, really bad place, very, very low vibration. It's too much to ask for that person to get into alignment to go do an interview and get it right the first time. You just can't do that. What is more important, and this is something Joel argues for pretty strongly, is you got to get him taking some action so that he's breaking the old pattern.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
for that particular,
You know, it obviously depends on what one's situation is. If we're dealing with something that's really very traumatized for us, often it's good just to start taking the action and then immediately follow it with alignment before you take the next action and just keep working it until you can build yourself up that way.
Oh, absolutely. That was a good idea. I'm glad it worked for him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Joel's a real – in fact, Joel is actually writing a book that he's going to call The Law of Action.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. He's in the middle of writing it. He's in the middle – believe it or not, he's in the middle of writing like 3 or 4 different books right now. Can you believe that?
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive.
That's right. Just writing one can be like enough of a keep you busy enough.
He has the most active life I have ever heard of. I mean, he has so many things that goes on in his life. I don't know how he does it all, but he does it all with joy. He loves it all. He loves his life, and that's how he does it.
That's right. Yes.
So anyway, we got 3 paragraphs left in this chapter. Let's finish those up. It says, it is a value to notice that even though nothing has outwardly changed, the feeling of being overwhelmed has lifted because you have focused your thoughts back into alignment with who you really are. We want you to know that whenever you are choosing or think unkind thoughts about yourself or anyone, you are counter to your inner being who only feels love for you. When you degrade, scold, or criticize yourself, you are out of alignment with the greater part of yourself, and there are no greater crippling thoughts than those of self-denigration. When you give yourself the benefit of the doubt, you realign with who you really are. Some say that a refusal to look at your own shortcomings is a state of denial that is not healthy. We reply that pointing out your own shortcomings is the greatest state of denial, for it separates you from who you really are. And then in italics, the last paragraph, some people feel criticism for people who look for their own positive aspects, calling them arrogant or self-serving. We reply that to be self-serving is a good thing. For when you care enough to bring yourself into alignment with the greater part of who you are, while you have certainly served yourself, in parentheses, and you know that because you feel so much better, you now are in a position to be of value to others. But in your depression, you are of no value to any other, for you are separate from the stream of well-being from which you offer value.
Yes. Yes.
Now, that first paragraph, the end of that first paragraph, where it says, when you degrade, scold, or criticize yourself, and by the way, it doesn't have to be that severe. It can be just as simple as being a little hard on yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You are out of alignment with a greater part of yourself. Now, that's a really interesting point. And the reason I say it's interesting is, first of all, until I heard about Abraham Hicks, I never realized that I had an inner being. I mean, I was aware of this idea that, you know, the world of spirit was within and inside was where you could find, you know, loved ones who had passed. It's where you could find God. It's where you could find source energy, all that kind of stuff. I had never realized the idea that there was a greater part of me that was the inner being part, the inside part. And so I'd always treated it, that inside part, as if it were not me, as if it were in kind of a way separate from me, if you know what I mean. So once I understood from Abraham's teaching that it's really just an extension of who I am, that, and that it's the greater part of me. It's a non-physical part, but it is a, it's where the vast majority of me is. Well, that actually kind of messed around with my head for a bit while I got used to it for a few years, until finally I got to the point where I started to buy into it and recognize it. Because that's what a belief is, right? A belief is a thought you think over and over again. Well, I started to believe in myself. Yeah. I started to believe in my inner being. And in the process of doing that, I came to the conclusion that, first of all, I really was doing myself a disservice whenever I didn't recognize that that was my own self. That was part of me. And I know it sounds so strange to say that, but I think most of us do that most of the time. I think most of us don't give credit to who we are inside.
You mean you think most people feel like a disconnect?
A disconnect. I think to a large extent, it's a naming of an otherness. Like I was describing, I mean, often Christians will say that God is within, right? And so they'll treat the within as if it were this other being called God. Or it's the connection to our lost loved ones who have passed on. Or it's never us who's inside. You notice that? The way that most people see it is that energy, that whatever that thing is that's inside, that's, you know, not just the organs and so forth, but the deep, deep down stuff, isn't us, according to the way most people think of it. And I guess that's called separation. But now that I understand it, I think, wow, this is really important. It's very, very important to recognize that, first of all, that other part of me is there. Second of all, that other part of me loves me, because after all, it's part of me. And third, that's where my power is. That's pretty important stuff, I think.
Yes, yes. Your inner. So how would you define your inner being, then?
My inner being is the rest of me in the non-physical.
Is that what you would say is sort? Is your connection to source energy?
Or? Well, it's part of. I am part of source energy. We are all part of source energy. Source energy is not separate from us. We are part of source energy. Source energy is the energy of life. Well, we're part of that.
Yes.
How about you? So how do you look at it?
Well, that's kind of how I look, my inner being. That's kind of the part of me that's connected to source, that is source.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of almost like my soul, my inner being is my soul.
Yeah, that's the closest I've ever had.
The non-physical. Yeah, the physical is obviously, when you look in the mirror, and the inner being to me is like my soul, my connection to source.
Soul is one of those words that I never, up until the last few years when I started studying this stuff, I never really had a good use for it. I didn't have a clear sense of what soul was. And even now, the word still has kind of funny feelings for me, but now at least I have a meaning for it. It is the complete me, the combination of the physical and the non-physical me. And now that starts to make some sense to me.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting in the chapter of Totally Disorganized, it didn't really go into, so that's why you should be organized. They kind of just...
Well, as somebody who's been through that, that's why I mentioned the part where it says about denigrating, scolding, or criticizing yourself. And usually it isn't even that. It's more like just being tough on yourself. Because I don't think I knew at the time that I was having so much difficulty staying organized and, you know, keeping the house clean and so forth. I didn't realize it was because I was being hard on myself. I think that was probably the last idea that came into my head, which means it never did. And yet, looking back on it, now I totally understand. Absolutely, I was being hard on myself. You know what, David? I didn't even think I was being hard on myself. I really didn't.
Huh.
I thought of myself as just holding myself to a higher standard.
Right.
I mean, I didn't think of it as being difficult on myself or, you know, being hard on myself or being rough with myself. I didn't think of it that way. Looking back, yeah, I was. But I just didn't think of it that way. So I think I guess I say that because I think it's important for everyone to kind of take stock and ask, you know, how kind am I really being to myself? Because it isn't so much whether I'm being rough on myself. It's actually how kind am I being? how much am I showing love for myself? I mean, we talk about how important it is to love yourself, right? I think most philosophical and religious belief systems take that into account, that you should be kind to yourself, you should love yourself. But how many of us actually take stock to find out how well we're really doing on that score? I think we should all be doing more.
You have to have that awareness to do that.
Yeah. I think it's good for all of us to just spend more time doing it. That's one of the big things I've gotten out of doing this mirror work now for more than a couple months now. It's a way of telling myself, yeah, I really appreciate who I am.
Yes.
And kind of building that side up, you know, building up my confidence, building up my belief in myself, building up my love for myself. It's a very, very important thing. It's kind of a shame that there's this awful thing that goes on where people, you know, say, oh, well, he's so selfish. He's so, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's really, I don't know if people understand just how mean-spirited that is. That's a very mean-spirited thing to say. We really need to be loving ourselves. If we loved all of us, if we loved ourselves a whole lot more and did a whole lot less criticizing about, oh, he's so selfish or she's so selfish, we'd have a much happier society and a healthier one, too.
Mm-hmm. 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 But it's interesting about this chapter is I definitely feel happier when a room in my home is organized and tidied and looks good compared to when it's like in disarray, like kind of like before you tidy it up. Because when I look back into the room and it's all tidied and organized, it really does feel good. It's like, oh, that looks so great. It's like, that makes me feel good.
That's a good thing. I know as somebody who came from the other side, from the disorganized side, I think what actually we end up feeling more than anything else is relief, which is really what Abraham's trying to help us to achieve. Like when the crew came through and cleaned out my condo and then redecorated and painted all the walls and changed the carpeting and all that stuff, I felt relief. I mean, when they were all done, it was beautiful. And by the way, it sold at a premium price, so it was well worth the investment.
Oh, right. It was worth it.
Oh, yeah. It was very well worth it. I mean, the condos in that complex were appraising for around $44,000 to $48,000. And this particular condo, after I got it fixed up, I asked 65 and sold it for 62.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was definitely worth it.
For sure.
And obviously, I did not live in a place that had expensive condos. Not even close.
But see, but getting organized did those?
Oh, yeah. It did help. Yeah. But my point is, when it was all done, I loved the work that they did, but I didn't feel happy. What I felt was relief. And the relief was immense. The relief was absolutely huge. So I guess I say that as a way of telling people, if you're dealing with something like this and you have a problem with, you know, clutter or whatever, what you're aiming for is the relief. The relief is your first big goal to go for. And not that you can't get to the happy place like David is, where he's real happy to have his organized space. You can, but what you want to get to is the relief first. Because when you get to the relief, then happy is a very close step after that.
Yeah, especially like when you clean out a junk drawer, or you have that pile of papers that keeps piling up. And you're like, oh, I'm going to get to that eventually. Oh, I'll get to that eventually. And then it reaches a certain height, and you finally have to get to it, and you do it. It is a relief. It's like, oh, I'm so glad I went through that. I'm so glad it's not there anymore.
And by the way, there is, if it isn't enough to want to have the relief, and if it isn't enough to want to get organized so you can have a better life and so forth, there is another reason why it's worth taking the time, putting in the effort to reorganize your energy and get yourself into a place where you clean up, where you get help to clean up or something like that. And that is the experience that I had with my father. My father was actually a fairly organized man, but he had collected quite a bit of things, not clutter, not by any sense of imagination clutter, but he had a bunch of things that he collected since his youth. And when it came for him long past the age of retirement to move into a senior center, they'd been living on a beautiful lake in Virginia, and they'd gotten to the point where my dad was suffering from Parkinson's disease. And so they really needed to get into a place where they could have, you know, more direct care. But it also meant downsizing. And my dad couldn't let go of the stuff he'd accumulated. I had never seen my dad look so helpless ever. My dad was always the person who got everything done, who got the stuff organized. Right. We went, you know, we would do a long cross-country journey, and he'd have everything worked out with lists, and you know, everything would be packed in a certain way. He was a very organized person. But when it came to letting go of stuff that he really had no use for the rest of his life, because it was only like the last few years of his life, stuff he would never have use for again, he couldn't let go of it. And I have never seen my dad in so much pain, emotional pain, as I did when I was trying to help him deal with that. And finally, I said to him, "Dad, would you like me to just decide what to keep here?" And he said, "Please." The relief was on his face. And I helped him to get, he couldn't even get up. I helped him get out of the room so he could walk, to another room where I could go back and take care of it. And then I very quickly made some quick decisions, threw most of it out, kept a few things that I knew he'd like to have, But boy, oh boy, if none of the other reasons, like making your own immediate life happy, like, getting yourself organized, if none of that works for you, think about this. If you don't do it now, you're going to reach the place that my dad was in where you can't let go of anything at the time when you really need to let go of it. It's so much easier to let go of it now than it is to let go of it later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of stuff.
Oh, you do?
I kind of collect. I go through different phases where I collect different things, but it's organized, though.
Mm.
Like, I don't have, disarray in my house, but I've always kind of been like that.
Mm-hmm.
In my younger days, like even if I lived in a small apartment,
mm-hmm.
I always, because it always felt better. It just naturally felt better to me to live in an environment that was, organized and cleaned. And when you walked in, it looked really nice compared to like all the clutter and papers and this and that.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's a big thing. And there are an awful lot of people out there who live with clutter. And among other things, the hardest part is there's a shame associated with it. And that shame often prevents people from taking the steps they need to take in order to overcome it. So sometimes you have to have somebody to talk to help get past the shame part, because there's no reason to feel shame. There really isn't. But nevertheless, if it's there as an issue, this shame feeling, then you got to address it so you can move past it, so you can get into the place you need to be in to get the life you want, to get the clutter out of the way and all that kind of stuff. So
it's so interesting, because there used to be a TV show, I don't think it's on anymore, where someone would go in to someone's home that was really cluttered.
Oh, yeah.
Really cluttered.
Yeah.
And at first the person would have a lot of resistance. No, no. And then finally they agreed to let their house be decluttered and things be thrown away. And then they would return home and everything would be like beautiful. Like that was part of the show. Like at the end, they would come home and their house would be totally organized. Anything that wasn't usable would either be donated or thrown out. And always in the end, the person was like, "Wow, I never knew this could look so good. And it feels so much better. It feels so much better not to have all the clutter and the disarray and the depressing look that, the room had or the house had."
The only thing I've ever wondered about that is I wondered how many of them were recidivists. I wonder how many of them became messy later on. And the reason I ask that is,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that part.
Because if you don't address your own energy where all that's concerned, like if I hadn't addressed that energy where my condo was concerned, and I did, but if I hadn't, then even getting the condo cleaned up by somebody else and sold at a nice price and so forth, I still would have ended up being messy if I hadn't ended up addressing it. I had to address it head on. That's really important to mention.
I'm glad that you had it taken care of.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, look what the time is.
I know, we zoomed right past here. So, yeah, this has been great, though. This has been a very important conversation. And, for people who are dealing with it, just want you to know you're not alone. Other people have been through it, too. And you can actually get to that better feeling place. The relief can come.
Oh, absolutely. If anybody wants some wonderful law of attraction coaching, just go to lifecoachdavid.com. And you can contact me through there.
And that's it. And we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.